This episode is also brought to you by Odmos Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Order today at 503-263-8444 or visit them online at odmos.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. The city of Canby will host an open house later this month to discuss plans and collect input for a new dog park, an amenity that has long been at or near the top of the most desired community projects for residents and leaders, but which has drawn some opposition over its cost and proposed location on North Territorial Road. The meeting will take place at 6 p.m. Wednesday, September 28th, in the Council Chambers of the Canby Civic Center, located at 222 Northeast 2nd Avenue. It will include an overview of the design and concept plan, and attendees will have the opportunity to provide comment and input on the proposal. The Canby Dog Park was a subject of intense community interest about a decade ago, when the city established a citizen advisory committee to conduct research, identify potential sites, and advise the council on design and amenities. The grassroots effort included a petition with more than 500 signatures in favor of a fenced, off-leash dog park in Canby, a series of Yappy Hour events hosted locally in support of the project, and a Friends of the Canby Dog Park Facebook page that was active until at least October of 2020. Over the course of several years, starting in 2011, proponents reviewed several proposed sites, ultimately settling on a 6-acre former residential property in the 1500 block of Northeast Territorial Road, which the city purchased in 2008 for future expansion of the nearby wastewater treatment facility and park development. An interdepartmental agreement was signed in August of 2012 between the city's Public Works and Parks departments to exchange land for the development of the dog park at that location. The project was eventually shelved in 2015 due to lack of funding, especially for maintenance, which caused city leaders to put a temporary halt on the development of any new park amenities. And, though the property remains undeveloped, it has begun to see some limited use as a sort of informal dog park anyway, with a gravel parking area and receptacles for trash and dog waste. Community interest in the project appears to remain high. Consultants contracted by the city last year to update its park master plan identified a dog park or off-leash area as the second most desired new amenity in Canby after a community center with sports fields. But opposition to the location has grown in recent months, including among the city's Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, with opponents citing concerns about cost, usability, viability, and safety. An earlier draft version of the site plan for the Canby Dog Park on Northeast Territorial Road. The planned access road just off Territorial Road is much busier now than it was in 2012, with it also serving the city's shops and wastewater treatment facility along with the new Canby Fire District, Northside Medical Station. And unusually, though the city owns the property, at least 4/5 of the proposed site lie outside of the city's urban growth boundary, creating the need to work with Clackamas County officials and complicating the development process with additional red tape. The Parks Advisory Board has expressed its preference for other sites, including a city-owned property on Northwest 3rd Avenue, commonly known as the Honda Pits, a former gravel quarry and landfill until 1960. The city acquired the 14-acre property 33 years later, with plans to develop it for park space. The Canby Skate Park was built on the property's north side 15 years ago. At the Canby City Council's most recent meeting on September 7th, Parks and Recreation Advisory Board Chair Barry Johnson was critical of what he characterized as a failure to vet other locations, including the Honda Pits or Molalla River State Park, which currently boasts an unfenced off-leash area for dogs. I think it would be wise to vet any other locations to see if they would come under at a lower rate or a better cost, Johnson said. You need to do cost comparison on projects like this. Johnson said he is not opposed to a dog park in general, something he has also stressed in the past. I just think we need to make sure we're not giving the dog park a break, he said. We seem to be taking on extra costs to fit the dog park in at this location, and we're going to eat that cost. The council budgeted $900,000 for the project, which would be much more than the other new parks amenities in the city's recent history, such as the aforementioned skate park, which was built for $360,000 in 2008, and the new splash pad at Maple Street Park, which came at a cost of about $475,000 2 years ago. But proponents say that figure contains contingencies and other elements that are not likely to be included in the final design, meaning the actual cost of the project would come in far under the budgeted amount. What we have before us is basically the fully loaded Tesla version of this park, Councillor Sarah Spoon said on September 7th. But we, almost certainly, will not build everything priced out in that budget. For example, the current design of the project includes a perimeter sidewalk with an anticipated price tag of $144,000, something Spoon said she does not believe the project needs. Dogs don't use sidewalks in the summer, she said. It gets too hot, and it would be outside the fence, so it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Removing that item would put the cost of the project at around $500,000, not including contingencies, Spoon said. Amazon has hit the brakes on its plans to build a proposed 517,000 square foot warehouse on a 47.5 acre lot located on Township, Sequoia, and Molina Roads in the Canby Industrial Park. The internet retail giant announced last September that the new sorting and shipping facility would bring 500 new jobs to the community, paying an average wage of $18 an hour, with plans to open in 2023. I look toward a future of building a relationship with Amazon, just as I do with all of the businesses located within the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park, Canby Mayor Brian Hodson said in a press release at that time. But a city planning process to review the revised plans for the project failed to materialize this year, and news broke last week confirming that the company has put its plans for the facility on hold indefinitely. The city of Canby received notification the proposed Amazon project has been paused, Canby Economic Development Director Jamie Stickle told media outlets this week. The city does not have a sense of how long Amazon's project will be paused or what will happen to the property in the meantime. Bloomberg, citing prominent consultancy MWPVL International Inc., reported earlier this month that Amazon had closed or halted plans to open 42 warehouses with a combined footprint of nearly 25 million square feet and was delaying another 21 locations. The change in strategy comes as consumer patterns largely return to normal this year following the pandemic-fueled boom for online retailers in 2020 and 2021. Soaring inflation affecting gas and other basic consumer goods has also made its mark. Amazon declined to comment on the Canby project specifically, but spokesperson Alyssa Carroll said the company runs a dynamic business and must frequently adapt to business conditions. There are a variety of factors we weigh when deciding where to develop future sites to best serve our customers, and it's common for us to explore multiple locations at the same time and then adjust those plans based on our operational needs, Carroll said in a written statement. Amazon also has shipping facilities in Troutdale, Portland, Hillsboro, and Salem, and is building a massive 3.84 million square foot fulfillment in Woodburn. The Canby facility was to have been a sortation center, where Amazon would process deliveries that have already been packaged for delivery stations, where the packages are put into the delivery vans. Initially presented as Canby South, a speculative project with no confirmed end user, the original warehouse and distribution center approved by the Canby Planning Commission would have been even larger, covering 683,000 square feet, with plans for a future expansion of 107,000 more. Because the design preferred by Amazon deviates significantly from the approved version, the project would have had to been reviewed again by city staff and planning officials. The Oregon State Police and other state officials on Tuesday served search warrants at a property on South Kritiser Road, south of Oregon City, rescuing more than a dozen malnourished and neglected animals, recovering stolen property, and finding nearly 3,000 marijuana plants. The Northwest Region Marijuana Team investigators began an investigation after finding 22 greenhouses that are not registered to legally grow hemp or marijuana. According to OSP, investigators found 9 horses and 4 cattle that were malnourished and in need of veterinary care. The Oregon Humane Society and other animal rescue organizations helped document the animal evidence and also took possession of the horses and cattle. Authorities found 2,987 marijuana plants, approximately 3,000 pounds of bulk marijuana, and 4 firearms. The team of investigators also recovered stolen property, including 2 tractors, a track hoe, a travel trailer, a heavy haul trailer, a pickup truck, and an SUV. Investigators also recovered a Lamborghini sports car that is a suspected proceed from the illegal marijuana growing operation. Police say investigators contacted 8 individuals living in multiple locations throughout the approximately 75-acre property. The case and potential felony marijuana and animal neglect charges will be referred to the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office. The FOB Tap Room in Canby brought the town's first Oktoberfest to Waite Park on Saturday, bringing hundreds into the heart of downtown Canby to celebrate German food and culture and sample more than a dozen hand-selected German beers. For photos, visit the Canby Current on Facebook or Instagram at Canby Current. Cougar Country hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Rife and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. If the Canby Cougars felt daunted facing their second straight 6A opponent, Beaverton, on the road while grappling with a slew of injuries to several key players, including their star running back, they certainly didn't show any sign of it Thursday night, routing the winless Beavs 37-7 to improve to 3-0 on the season. The banged-up Cougs suffered several injuries during the week and piled on a few more over the course of Thursday's contest. Fortunately, most of them are minor, and head coach Jimmy Joyce is hopeful most, if not all, will be back in action next week or the week after. The most concerning involved star junior and early offensive player of the year, candidate Tyler Canold, who amassed an eye-popping 495 yards and 6 touchdowns in his first 2 games. Canold rolled his ankle on the opening kickoff, and though he was effective in limited opportunities, 4 carries for 36 yards, Joyce and his team felt it safest to sit him early. Canold got a little dinged up on the first play, so he was very limited, Joyce said. Eventually, we sat him to allow him to heal. Starting quarterback Gage Millar sat out Thursday after tweaking a lingering knee injury in practice, and his replacement, Parker Ackerman, also went down before halftime after a stellar first half. Not that it mattered. Canby led 37-0 before the Beavers managed to punch 1 in late in the fourth to avoid getting shut out on their home turf. Our depth showed up in a big way, Joyce said. Kellen Oliver came in at QB and balled out. Landon Sprague, Ethan Enstrud, and Walker Conroy carried the load and came up big. We have around 65 players on varsity, and I think all 65 played key roles tonight. Another superb performance, though it was no surprise, came from junior speedster Cohen Hall, one of the season's big standouts on the Cougars' receiving corps. Hall, who took a blocked field goal 80-plus yards to the promised land during last week's win over Oregon City, added three in the more traditional way this week, catching a TD pass each from Ackerman and Oliver and throwing in one on the ground for good measure. Seniors Landon Sprague and Ethan Ensrud provide more than capable of replacing Canold's otherworldly production, piling up 71 and 38 yards respectively, along with a touchdown each. Playing the first varsity minutes of his promising career, sophomore Kellen Oliver impressed, going 3 of 4 for 98 yards and a touchdown. It was a homecoming for Joyce as he returned to his high school alma mater and the place he spent 7 years as offensive coordinator before taking the head coaching job at Cambie in 2019. The Cougs have gone 16-13 under Joyce, including 14-6 the past three seasons. "It was a lot of fun," Joyce said. "I have a lot of great memories on that field, won a state championship as a player, and had some great memories as a coach. But tonight is right up there. So proud to be a Cambie Cougar, and while Beaverton will always have a special place in my heart, Cambie is now my home." Joyce said Canold, Millar, and Ackerman will be evaluated by team doctors next week to determine if they will play in Friday's non-league home tilt versus an especially tough-looking Bend team. The Lava Bears have allowed only 7 points in three games while averaging more than 47. Friday's game will kick off at 7 p.m. at Cougar Stadium.
I'm Roz Mason, Democratic candidate for Senate District 26. I'm deeply honored to announce I've also been endorsed by the Independent Party of Oregon. Next time, I'll talk inflation. Here's some context before my next ad. If the income distribution from 1947 to 1974 had held steady, regular people's income would be double today. Instead, income inequality exploded. The top 1% of Americans have taken $50 trillion from the bottom 90%. That's from the title of a Time magazine article you can find online. How did it happen? Wall Street finance deregulation, massive stock buybacks for executive salaries and shareholder profits, overtime rules and the right to unionize being chipped away, allowing mergers and acquisitions, so now a few companies have near monopolies. We can do better. Until next time, this was paid for by Mason for Oregon 21968.
Wow, Frankie, that sounds great. I didn't know that you could play the kalimba.
Yeah, well, I've been practicing a lot. I'm really hoping to make it onto the 434th season of America's Got Talent.
Well, good luck with that, man.
Yeah, hey, I was actually just about to check my email and see if they responded.
Uh-huh. Yeah?
Oh.
What?
Well, they hated it.
No way.
Yeah, they said it was really bad, but like not in like a funny way, so they're not interested.
Dang. What song did you end up playing?
The same one I was playing earlier. Listen, here's what I uploaded.
Oh. I mean, I kind of like it. It's like a dark remix meets Star Wars sort of sound.
No. That's not what I recorded at all. How did this happen?
Dude, it's like I always tell you. That choppiness you're hearing is because your internet provider speeds are on the slower side. Everyone focuses on downloading, but upload speeds are just as critical for students, remote workers, would-be reality talent show stars, really anybody who uses the internet to share their passion with the world.
Is there like a show called America's Got Bad Internet that I could audition for?
Maybe. Or you could just switch to DirectLink. They've got the most reliable upload speeds to pass any audition test. For uploads at the speed of learning, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give them a call at 503-266-8111.
All right. Tell us your name and where you were born and when.
Yeah, my name is Walter Fultz, and I was born in Minnesota on the Plum Creek.
Yeah?
Right outside of Walnut Grove.
Okay.
That's where the little house in the prairie was started, I guess you'd say, on Plum Creek.
Were you born in a log cabin?
No, but I was born right alongside the creek.
Actually, along the creek, outside?
Oh, yeah. Ruth was all excited about that. So we toured that years ago. So.
So not in a hospital or anything? You were born?
No. Hmm. Most of the people were born in my age and at home.
Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just want to be, you were born at a house along the creek or actually outside?
A house.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that I was born down by the creek, and I thought maybe they was on a picnic or something.
Yeah, 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 out kayaking or something.
My uncle took us by. The house still looked good in 83 when we were there. So.
Yeah, yeah. What? When were you born?
1933, June the 8th.
Yeah. What was your childhood like?
Hmm?
What was your childhood like?
Well, we moved to Bandon, Oregon when I was 2 years old, right on the coast.
Yeah.
I should say we moved first year it was at Jefferson, and then the town of Bandon burned down to the ground.
Right.
In 1936, so right after the fire, we moved to 1936. I had an aunt and an uncle that had a gas station there. So.
Yeah. What was that like in Bandon growing up?
Well, we were 3 miles out of town. Went to a little country school. And I think they had four grades in one room.
Yeah.
I used to sit there. I was the only one in the third grade one for a half a year.
Yeah. Didn't have any classmates.
Uh-uh.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had my brother Lloyd, he's 4 years older than I am, and then my other brother Jack was 10 years older. So. And then my sister was about 6 years older, I guess.
So. Okay, yeah. What did your parents do, either for work or?
Yes, Dad was a farmer in Minnesota. He lost a couple of crops and so my mom encouraged him to move out to Bandon where her sister was living.
Yeah.
And so he took him 9 months to get a job down at the sawmill. This was right in the Depression, so.
Yeah. Was that a difficult time?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember much, but.
Yeah.
But then Pearl Harbor happened when I was 9. And so the little town really brightened up. We had a lot of jeeps and trucks driving around and blimps overhead. And
yeah.
Now in the ocean, we had Coast Guard patrol on horseback.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of fear that Japan would attack the coast.
Right. Yeah.
Attack Oregon from the
coast. So it was pretty exciting for a 9 year old. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you and your friends fight the war, pretend, things like that? Or
oh, yeah, we killed more Germans and Japs and Italians.
Than Captain America. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting times.
Yeah. So for the generation that's a little older than you, Grandpa, you know, Pearl Harbor was a big motivating factor for many of them in going into the service, you know, to fight the Nazis and the Axis powers.
Yeah.
You obviously weren't old enough then, but you talked about how you remember how that made an impression on you. Do you feel like that was a catalyst for you in your eventual decision to join the military when you did, when you were old enough after the war had ended?
Probably, but my older brother was 10 years older than I was, so he was 19.
Okay.
But he was in the Navy.
And during World War II?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
that was Jack?
Jack. They were towing a target, mm-hmm. a big target they shoot at with ships, and a cable snapped and hit him in the arm, and he got a medical discharge. But yeah.
Did he recover from that?
Yeah, he was a truck driver. He had a lot of strength in that right hand.
Yeah.
Because when I was about 17, I was tried him one day. I crooked down on his hand.
Yeah.
And I was down on my knees. I thought he was going to break my hand.
The one that was wounded or the other one?
No, the good one.
The good one was really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nature's way of making up.
Compensating.
For, yeah.
Did he lose his left arm or just weaker?
Yeah, he could use it.
A little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so he was discharged from the service at that point.
Yeah,
he became a truck driver.
Discharge.
Yeah.
And my middle brother, he was 4 years older.
Mm-hmm.
And he joined the Navy, and I joined in 1950. I guess he joined in about 48 or 49 before the Korean War started. So.
Yeah.
And then I went to, when I got out of boot camp, I put in to get on his ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he met me at the quarter deck and says, I told you not to put in for this lousy ship. And I says, thanks a lot, brother. I did. And so the ship was in the Mare Island shipyards and close to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so this was spring of 1951.
Yeah.
And when the ship got out of the yards, well, that's when we headed overseas. And so.
Yeah. You fudged a little bit about your age to get in, didn't you?
No, my dad signed for me.
Okay, you were 17, but
seven? No, I was 17. Just
17.
4 days later, I wanted to get on my birthday. But
okay, so you were almost 17.
Well, I was 17 plus 4 days.
Okay,
all legal.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was allowed with parental consent.
As long as parents signed for us.
Okay.
He asked me, what would I do if I didn't sign for me? And I said, well, I'll wait until next year. And so he went ahead and I wasn't doing real good in school.
Yeah.
Like I was looking out the window a lot, dreaming about going to sea.
Was the war on at that point with Korea? Had it started?
Yes, it started on June the 25th, 1950.
Okay, and when did you go in?
I went in 13 days before it started. I went in the 12th of June, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, so it hadn't broken out yet.
No, I went in peacetime, and then 13 days later it was...
Well, what did you think when the war broke out?
Oh, at that age, I don't know. We were so busy there in boot camp.
Didn't even pay much attention to it.
No, trying to survive.
What was boot camp like?
In San Diego, California.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you remember from boot camp?
Oh, I remember learning quite a bit. Like our company commander said that he couldn't make us do anything. And I thought, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
He said, but I can make you wish the hell you had it done. And they said, oh, okay.
Oh, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have any problems with the physical? I mean, you're a big, strong guy, right?
No, I didn't have any problems with that. We had 100 men, boys in our barracks. Well, we had a lot of fist fights in there.
Yeah.
Because we had people from one end of the Pacific Ocean to the East Coast.
Yeah. Were you involved in any of that?
Oh, a couple times, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, just people of different backgrounds and whatnot getting into it? Or
I think you'll remember that story I wrote when I was in boot camp, and one of the boot camp leaders told me to get to the end of the line.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll get even with you.
Yeah.
And when I was coming back from chow, I met my buddy who he beat up.
Yeah.
And then they said, you're waiting for you. So when I got there, everybody was watching.
Yeah.
So I took my watch off, my jumper, and went in the office, and he says, shut the door. And then he faked a punch at me to see if I would cower, and I hit him in the mouth with my left jab.
Yeah.
And then I noticed I was down in the corner of the room. I don't know how I got there. And when I was getting up, he hit me in the head, and that was the end of the fight.
Yeah.
And which was lucky for me.
Yeah.
But that was about the worst thing, I guess, that happened to me there. But.
Yeah, yeah. So made it through boot camp, and then what happened?
We went from boot camp to Treasure Island. I was waiting to get a ride over to a ship. It's just maybe 50 miles away. It was in the Mare Island shipyards.
Yeah.
And so finally I got a private car and it drove me over to the shipyards and I went aboard the ship then, so.
Yeah. And where was it? Was it headed for Korea?
Yeah, we was in the yards and this was in September of 50. And so we got out of the yards in February and went to sea and sea trials, they call it. And they put a lot of heavy landing craft on top of our A deck, on a top deck. And we were top heavy. And we went out under the Golden Gate Bridge, and I was really excited. And the boat said, you know what rat guards are?
No.
Any other big metal things they put around the lines to keep the rats from coming aboard.
Okay.
Or getting off the ship.
Yeah.
He said, stole the rat guards. And I was busy doing that. And the ship, the engineers on there was measuring it. It was really top heavy. It was almost dangerous.
Yeah.
So they made a U-turn, and the boats come by, and he says, break out the rat guards. And I said, just store them.
Yeah.
So we went back under the Golden Gate Bridge. And then they put several tons of ballast down in the bilges, which made us stable then.
Yeah.
But that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we shipped out, I think it was early March.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember much about that moment of leaving the United States, I guess, for the first time in your life?
No, I was just looking forward to everything.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. What was life on board the ship like?
Well, we, being a new guy, I'll get my thoughts going here. I was, of course, a junior guy in the whole fleet, so I took a lot of flack from the other guys that was, you know, good-natured kidding and one thing and another because they were old-timers, you know.
Yeah.
And they called me a boot. And I said, I'm not a boot. I'm out of boot camp.
Yeah.
He says, you're a boot till you've been on here for at least a year. And I thought, oh, no. But 2 weeks later, we got to Yokosuka. I guess they call it Yoko. And had orders to go to Okinawa, and we loaded up a lot of war stuff there, jeeps and small artillery and guns and all stuff, and took them up to Incheon, Korea.
Yeah.
Which was the second invasion. The big invasion was in September of 1950.
Right.
We were in the boot camp then.
Right.
So we unloaded everything onto smaller vessels, and they took them to the beach. Hmm. And then they went back to Okinawa and did that again. So
yeah,
that was kind of a little bit scary.
Yeah, yeah. What was scary about it?
Well, we had blackouts at night when unidentified airplane were flying over. You know,
right.
And then we were in the war zone.
Yeah, yeah. Could you hear the fighting?
No, we couldn't hear the fighting.
Yeah, yeah. But you knew it was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the drivers and everybody on our ship was unloading them, and they went with their vehicles up the Han River. I guess they got into it pretty bad up there. So.
Yeah, yeah.
After a while, we went to Sasebo Harbor, Japan. And we rode out, rode through a typhoon in in that part of the country. They call them typhoons. So.
Yeah.
And before the typhoon hit, our captain, he was a nervous type guy, and I was on, I was a helmsman then.
Yeah.
And I was on duty up in the helms. And he was pacing back and forth. And it was calm yet because the storm wasn't going to hit till that night. But he was drinking coffee, and out on the wing of the bridge, they had a latrine.
Uh-huh.
So I went out there and relieved myself. And I was coming back in, and I heard him going, "Helmsman, where's my helmsman?" I said, "Right here, sir. What would I have done if he weren't here?" Oh, and he was really shook up.
Yeah. Very nervous.
And he says, "You stand behind the helm at parade rest for the rest of your watch."
Right.
And then the storm hit that night. You know.
Yeah.
And it was pretty bad.
It's kind of funny. It reminds me of Gideon, a five-year-old. You know, I'll like go around a corner or whatnot, and he doesn't see me for a second. And he's instantly like tears, crying, you know, and whatnot. And people looking around for me, I'm like, "I'm right here."
Yeah,
you know?
What happened there?
Yeah. Yeah, I always tell people, it's like, it's okay. It's just because I abandon him all the time. You know, we're always just leaving now. Was the storm pretty bad?
Yes, it was. And a week before that, I got hit in the head. And I had, right between the eyes, I had several stitches. And I had to, every time this LST broke loose.
Yeah.
It was trying to keep from running into us or any other ships. But every time it got within a certain distance, they'd sound general alarm. We had to jump up, dress, and run up topside.
Yeah.
And the wind was blowing, you know, 100 miles an hour, I guess. And I kept putting my hand up. I just knew I was going to get hit in the head.
Yeah.
And this happened about three times, I guess. One time, another guy got my pants.
What?
Yeah, we all sleep, you know, everybody just grabbing stuff and putting it on.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we had to run topside about three times, you know.
Yeah.
But it was pretty exciting. You couldn't tell where the water and the air was separated. It was just blowing so hard.
Wow.
And our TV antenna on our ship was bent. But at least we got to ride it out because we was moored to a real heavy-duty mooring buoy.
Yeah.
And the other ships cut loose and went, rode it out to sea, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Was it cold?
No, this was in the summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know there are parts of the Korean War that were, for some of the service members, were very cold.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
When we were, I call it steaming, when we were steaming north along the east, west coast of Korea, it was below freezing then.
Mm. Yeah.
And we had condition one able. We had to everybody stand by their gun mounts and everything. And then another humorous thing: the captain was up on the bridge looking out at all of us guys standing around. And he told the chief, he says, he says, "Let those guys take a bucket of water up there and make marsh paintwork." And he said, "Well, sir," he says, "it's below freezing out there."
Yeah.
And captains are never wrong.
Right.
So he says, "Well, they can take their buckets up there anyway."
Yeah.
So it worked pretty good because we used the buckets to sit on.
That
was kind of fun. But it was cold.
Yeah.
But not like the soldiers. We had a warm place to sleep and hot food, you know. So.
Right, right. You never actually landed on Korea. You never actually set foot on Korea during your service.
We did in Busan.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, in Busan. When you first got there or after?
Oh, we came into Busan several times.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was where you would restock or something?
Yeah. I'm not too sure what we did.
Okay. Gotcha.
I don't remember restocking, but it was a place to come in port.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something. Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
What do you remember from your service? I mean, did you feel like you were, you know, accomplishing something?
Oh, yes, we did, because we were on a 6-month tour, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
And when we put our, no, before the 6 months was up, we went to Hong Kong, China for R&R. And that was interesting. Had a pretty good time.
Yeah.
And then when our 6 months was up, well, we were all excited because we thought we were heading home.
Yeah.
And the captain volunteered for 3 more months. Mm. So we went to Kobe, Japan, and unloaded all our landing craft that was on our ship.
Yeah.
And filled our holds full with supplies. And then we went to Wonsan Harbor, which was still in the war zone. Mm-hmm. And going into the harbor, we was thinking about the two minesweepers that were sunk and the sailors that were killed.
Yeah.
Sweeping the mines out of the harbor. So
yeah.
So we were hoping we would make sure that they got all the mines.
Yeah.
And then we went in and anchored. And then the cruisers and destroyers would send their smaller boats by and pick up supplies.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing, our anchor chain, when we dropped the anchor, we had a removable pin.
Mm-hmm.
So if we took fire, we could just pull the pin out,
right,
drop the chain, and then get underway without taking time to reel in the anchor chain. So
right.
We had a little wooden buoy on it with a 100-foot of rope.
Yeah.
So we'd know where to come back and pick it up. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But we made 2 trips in, and that was kind of exciting, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah. So how long was your tour with the Navy?
Was I who?
How long were you with the Navy in service?
5 years.
5 years. And how long over in Korea?
I was board ship for 27 months.
Okay.
Yeah. We was over 9 months the first time, and then the fall of 52, we went back over again.
Okay. Were you in service when the ceasefire was agreed to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I stayed in 55, and the ceasefire was in 53,
okay.
July 27th. So.
Gotcha. What was that like?
I was in the States at that time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But were you happy?
Yeah. We was a little disappointed that we didn't win.
Right.
But we knew the shooting was stopping anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd hoped for something much more decisive.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we pushed the North Koreans to the Yalu River, and then 300,000 Chinese come over. They pushed us clear back down to Pusan.
Right.
And then they fought their way back to the 32nd parallel, which is dividing between the north and south.
Right.
So that's where it ended, almost where it started. So.
Right, right. And what's now the DMZ?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there was 34,000 Americans died in that war.
Yeah.
17 nations provided a small amount of men.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't good.
Yeah. You got out in 1955.
Yes.
You're just ready to do other things, or your time was up, or what was your decision?
That was my enlistment was up for.
Yeah.
Because I enlisted for 4 years, and on my second, I get you all mixed up, my second deployment, we went over in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, I got a letter from my wife that she had a miscarriage.
Hmm.
And I'd already told them that I would sign up for UDT training, but then I told them, when they said I had to extend a year, I says, forget it.
Yeah.
I went down below, and there's a letter on my bunk from my wife. So I went back up and told them to sign me up.
Hmm.
And so then they flew me home. So,
yeah. So you agreed to another year so that you could leave to go see Ruth?
No, in order to get into UDT training, they had to have at least 2 years.
Okay.
And I had a year and a half left in.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't go for 6 months, so I had to sign up for a year or so.
Gotcha.
But I wanted to get home so bad, you know. That was their second miscarriage. So.
Yeah. You didn't have any children at that point?
No.
No. Yeah.
That was Karen. Karen was the first one.
Was the first one, yeah. She hadn't been born yet.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. When did you meet Ruth?
Hmm?
When did you meet Ruth?
In high school.
Yeah.
I was a year behind her because I had to repeat the seventh grade. Teacher liked me so good.
Yeah. I wanted to keep you around another year.
And then my good friend had two sisters that Ruth liked to visit. And then I visited my friend. That's how we got acquainted. So.
Yeah. What'd you think of her?
I thought she was real nice.
Yeah.
Real kind of gal I would like.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Except I was not dating because I was going to be a career Navy man.
Oh, you wanted to be in there for a career?
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So you were thinking you'd be a career Navy man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the way through boot camp, I was really doing good.
So what changed?
Well, before we shipped out the first time, right out of boot camp, when our ship was in the yards, I hitchhiked home and I took Ruth out to a movie.
Yeah. Was that your first date?
Hmm?
Was that your first date?
Yeah.
What'd you see?
Yeah, we saw the Winchester 73. I remember that.
Okay.
And it was just a half a mile, so we walked. And then I walked her back home.
Uh-huh.
And then I hitchhiked home from Frisco about three more times before we shipped out. So.
Yeah.
And then she wrote me every day. And I wrote her mostly every day. And that was our, what do you call it when you're dating?
Courtship.
Courtship was by mail.
Yeah.
So in those 9 months, we got to know each other pretty good. And we decided when I got back, we'd get married.
Hmm.
So when he got back in January of 1952, I took 30 days leave and went to Oregon, and we were married. So we were 18 years old. I think our parents were a little edgy about that.
Much later in life, you and Ruth went back to Korea, right, as a guest of the Korean government, South Korean government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Korean War Veterans Association, and they have I attend, member of, they had a revisit program.
Yeah.
And they paid my round trip trick ticket to South Korea in half of my life. Mm-hmm. And so we got to go to Seoul, and we were there, I think it was six days and five nights.
Yeah.
And they give us tours and banquets. Mm-hmm. Those Korean people are just so thankful that they're not living like North Korea.
Yeah.
And they did this for 20-some years. They'd send, because there was at least over 100 veterans a year would go there
Yeah, that's a really interesting case study when you look at geopolitics, because you can say countries turn out different sometimes because of their size or where they are or their, just their resources or whatnot. No country has a purely even playing field, but then you can look at North and South Korea because they're the same island, same location, same basic resources, very similar in size, and extremely different qualities of life for their residents, mainly because of political and economic policies and practices. So
South Korea, I think, now is seventh largest economy. Mm-hmm. And the North Koreans are Koreans too. They could be just as prosperous if it wasn't for the
same language, very similar culture. Same background. Did you also do the honor flight out to D.C.?
No, I signed up for it before the pandemic hit.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So that hasn't started back up quite yet, or
I haven't heard.
Haven't heard.
Yeah. One of our veterans went on that flight. He was about 90 years old, and he come back and he was just exuberant. He was still happy about it.
Yeah.
3 days later, he died. So he died happy.
Grateful that's sad, but grateful that he was able to have that.
That's what I thought.
Just in time. Wow, that's kind of amazing. When you look back on your service, I guess, what are your thoughts? I know there's, some feeling and some, I don't know if you want to say regret or resentment, but you sometimes hear, Korean War vets feel like that their service was forgotten. That was a forgotten war. Do you ever feel that way?
No, not that much. In order to get it through Congress or whatever, they call it a police action, and that stuck with us all the time.
Yeah,
they didn't declare war, and we still have this stigma of being a police action.
Yeah.
Well, it went on for 3 years.
Yeah.
And in 3 years, they lost 34,000 Americans, and in Vietnam was 10 years. They lost 40-some. So you can see how severe it was, So
yeah,
but I was glad I was in the Navy, and I could say I joined 2 weeks before it started. But I was following my two brothers in. So
yeah,
but
and it must have felt very rewarding or fulfilling to go there, many years later and see. Gratitude and just the difference that you and your other fellow service members were able to make in that country. And then at that point, you're seeing the impact in future generations, which is pretty cool.
Because where we unloaded the Incheon in September when they made the first invasion. Well, they took Seoul in, I think, a week. That was the capital.
Yeah.
But Seoul changed hands four times. And each time they did, they would blow up stuff so the next guy wouldn't have anything.
Yeah.
Four times back and forth. And when we went there in about 7 years ago, it's a beautiful city I ever saw.
Yeah.
There's like 12 million people there, and then another 12 million outside the area.
Yeah.
But the streets and everything, you don't see I better not get into politics.
Yeah.
But they're clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their tall buildings that they live in or has numbers on them because they're just oodles of them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a beautiful city now.
Yeah.
And they got the Hyundai automobile that they're see a lot of them here, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the guys who actually saw it when it was bombed and shelled down to a shell, and then when they went back, they was more surprised than I was because I didn't see it when it was in the worst, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made us feel good that they're that appreciative.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Well, I know this isn't really in your nature, but I'm gonna ask you anyway. I'd love to know. Do you have any sort of words of wisdom or things that you feel like you've learned in your life that you would pass on to the next generation?
Wisdoms, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Words of wisdom, things that you've picked up, or things that you wish people would know in the next generation.
Well, mainly. It's our younger generation that isn't as patriotic as we were that survived the Second World War.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault. But, and like in Switzerland, I met a Swiss man when I was fishing in Alaska. He said they all served, I think, 2 years. The military,
yeah,
which really gives you a good start, you know.
Yeah,
and then when they're after the 2 years, they give them a automatic rifle and ammo to keep in their closet.
Yeah,
they have to keep it in their closet. And he says in the summer they take them out and let them practice. He says we don't have any burglaries in Switzerland. Not that I kind of got off the subject, but I've talked to a lot of guys who went into boot camp, some of them before they was 17, because they had a hard time at home or poor or what have you.
Yeah.
And after 12 weeks of training, you learn a lot about everything, you know.
Yeah.
How to obey and do what they tell you to do. And maybe that's not going to fit in now, but I think we could do a better job in our schools and really point out some of the advantages of, well, military life. I'm not much of a philosopher.
Doing great.
Yeah.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or
that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This, Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.